Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here as today's host of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce, Amazon, marketplaces, entrepreneurship, you name it. Today, we're going to be talking about profit killers for every Amazon seller. And with me today, I have Jenny Adams from Sellerboard. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for staying up late. I know it's a late hour over there. I think you're in Germany right now. Is that correct?
At the moment, I'm in Moldova. Usually, I'm in Germany, but I'm here for another 3 days.
Okay. Well, she's always on the move. Thanks for making this happen. We've been trying to get you on for a little bit. Sellerboard's been a tool that Marknology has used for quite a few years, and one that's really helped us like educate our customers and be able to talk with them about, you know, the financials behind their business and how to get profitable. And you can just only have so much depth of a conversation about profitability or pricing or things like that to do without a tool like Sellerboard or something like that to be able to see the profitability of what's actually happening in the account. Before we just go in straight to Sellerboard and talking profit and numbers and boring stuff, let's talk a little bit about Jenny, if we can. I start every show, just getting to know a little bit about our guest and kind of like how you found e-commerce, because I know you're not a seller. We talked about that a little bit early. Sellerboard has, a
policy.
Yes. That they don't want sellers like working at the company. So we won't talk about that, but, you're in e-commerce, you've been in e-commerce, living, breathing it, working with sellers day in and day out. Where does your story begin? I know you come from, you speak multiple languages and you come from all over, but how did you come across the e-commerce? Like, what was your first, let's start before that. Have you always wanted to be an entrepreneur or work for startups? Like, where did that really come? Or was it something you kind of fell into?
It's crazy because, I don't really mention that in shows usually, but it's the first time mentioning it. But I lived in Egypt. I mentioned it to you prior to our recording. So I lived in Egypt. I graduated from a school there. So I speak Arabic very well. I was in American-German school. I studied, graduated. Then I decided that I want to study mechanical engineering. So I traveled to Europe. I ended up studying for a year mechanical engineering for a year in Egypt prior to traveling. Then I decided to quit, travel to Europe, and started studying international economic relations, world economy, political science. I did 3 majors. While being in Europe, I was taking different, I was doing 3 faculties at the same time in different universities. It was crazy. And I started working at 18 for, basically working prior to that with my dad in the logistics field.
Okay.
So I know a lot about logistics, how it works. We were working for a company that regulates all the ships that enter the Suez Canal. So I know everything about that. And so while I was in Europe, I started working for a company that sells airline tickets. So I was like 18. I studied university from zero again. It was like first year of university. I had an opportunity to make good money. When you're young, when you're 18, you're doing a couple of $1,000s. It's big money for you. So I started selling online tickets. So basically what I knew,
Were you at this time? Were you in Germany?
No, I was in Moldova. It's where my grandma is. I came to visit her.
I like the details. I like the details. Okay, you're in Moldova.
I was in Moldova. It's basically between Ukraine and Romania. It's a small country. Okay. My grandma was here. I did one of the faculties that I did. It was here. One of them was in Germany. One of them was in Romania. So what happened is while I was coming, I could do the airline tickets work remotely. So what I was doing is I was building flights in Galileo or Apollo. I can build very hard connection flights. And I was selling them. Thing is that when you are in a company that sells airline tickets, this one was huge. It was Asset Tickets, International Travel Network. So what you do is you have a ticket for 500, basically online, it's everywhere for 1500. You're selling it for 300, 1300 instead of 1500, like it's online. You have a 700 difference from which you get like 28% commission. So selling airline tickets for a year. And then I started working late shifts. I wanted to do more traveling. I could do that, but I had to always be on my PC during travels. It was very hard to combine with my universities because I'm like a geek, you know, I like studying, I like writing, I like doing the projects, I like everything. So, so what I did is my friend, her husband who's working with me in tickets, she had a husband who had an IT company. And she didn't work with him because he's annoying. And she was like,
She's married to someone that's annoying.
Yes.
Yes.
And I was very good at sales at that time. And they had an account executive position in one of leading European outsourcing companies, IT outsourcing. So I worked there for a year and a half. I was an account executive for a sales team. Then we built our own product, which was somehow connected to Net Promoter Score.
Okay.
And I saw an advertisement on some German website that had to do with, it was like in part project development or partnerships and affiliate marketing. I didn't get what was that about, but the advertisement looked very appealing. So they had the responsibilities of the job. It was like, you have to get in touch with partners. You have to know marketing. You have to be good in sales. It was basically everything I like to do. And the work was, there was an opportunity to work on the go. Basically, you have to be sometimes in the country, but you can travel whenever you want. And I applied and it was seller board. And basically, I've been with them for almost 3 years. I started doing partnerships and negotiations and affiliate marketing. With time, the founders of the company, it's Michael and Vladi, they got tired of recording all the podcasts and videos webinars and demos. And they had me try one. It went very well. And we got very good registrations from that one to SellerWorld. And then they decided that a girl does it better than guys sometimes.
Hmm. Yes,
and then I took over and I've been doing everything from feature descriptions to content writing to negotiations to demos. All the calls basically that SellerBoard takes, I take them. All the partnerships, I take them. I do demos, I do webinars. I've never sold anything on Amazon to avoid the conflict of interest with our users. But theoretically, I know a lot because I'm in constant touch with Amazon sellers, with people who have agencies, with people like you who have podcasts, and it's a lot of theoretical experience exchange, let's say.
I think one thing that's unique to Amazon, at least the Amazon
or the market. I never thought I'd be here.
Like, right. That's what, like, thinking about just like your decisions early in school and university and politics and mechanical engineering. I lived with a roommate that was a mechanical engineer. So
I like
different kind of brain almost than people that sell. It's almost completely separate, you know? So, but that's how I found e-commerce as well. Like I had a bachelor's of science. And I loved the marketing. I loved the selling. I loved like the emotional connecting with people, whether it's through podcasts like this, whether it's through selling online, like, you know, the photos and it was like a game for me, the nerd stuff, I guess, like you call it. It was like figuring it out. And that's what leads us even to this conversation about profit was, I wasn't a seller at the beginning. I've been in this space 11 years, almost entire. I'm a seller now, but at the beginning, it was almost all service based. Like I was doing services for others, helping them with their problems. And profit was one that kept coming up. So, you know, there's been other competitors in the space before Seller Board, Fetcher, Managed by Stats. I love those guys over there. They're great guys. You know, there's just been, if you've been in the space 11 years, you've seen stuff come and go. And Seller Board was one that we found where I'm always trying to imagine coming into Amazon before people really understand what's going on. Okay. It was a hard conversation. There weren't blogs to point to. There weren't YouTube channels to point to. There weren't people putting out podcasts like this every day about Amazon and how to sell on Amazon. It was like Wild West is the beginning. It was so much fun. But at the same time, it was like, I call the difference demand generation versus demand capture. Okay, so demand generation is where you're like telling people about your thing. You got to tell them it's cool. You got to tell them to try it. They don't know about it. You're like introducing them to it. Demand capture is people already know and you're saying, hey, we're the best software to do this out. And I know you're looking for profitability software. We're the best one and come choose us. So it's a different combo when you're like educating and kind of convincing people about Amazon. And it always came down to like, you know, profitability and trying to have that conversation with sellers or potential sellers to be on Amazon. It would, well, I don't know if I can make money with all the fees. Well, I don't know if I can, you know, Amazon just takes a lot or we're not being profitable on Amazon. Well, as a service provider, I've been seeing your sales grow by 50,000 a month. What are we talking about? Well, I need to know the numbers if we're going to have this conversation. And Seller Board, you know, just to make the plug, Seller Board is one of the best we've found for ease of use. And maybe that's been because it's designed for all different kinds of nationalities, or maybe, I don't know if they're German or not. Are the founders German?
German, yes.
Bloody. Okay, this is why it's amazing, probably, because Germans just make
amazing stuff.
They make everything great, you know, in my opinion. We might not get along because I'm so emotional, like, you know, I'm very emotional, but I want to buy all your things. And use them because they work so great. And it's like, you know, it was the difference in a lot of times it's the difference in keeping sellers or brands in the game, making money or not. And I think if as someone else that's sold from bartending, I've sold as a bartender while I was on tour and selling shows, you're selling CDs at the end. It's so much easier to sell something that you believe in, that solves a problem, that works or that has great value. And that's how I feel about Seller Board. So it's been something we've been selling as an agency for a long time.
There are a lot of great tools out there. I never used them, but of course, since I'm working in this field, I go to the websites, I check them accounts, I speak to other people who sell, and they always mention some other stuff. So there are a lot of amazing tools for different features, which are specifically for something else. But for what's true is true. So Seller Board is the most accurate tool in the market right now. It's been for the past 3 years since they joined, they were already the most accurate, and they do have amazing features. So there might be for other features, I don't know, for something else, other tools might be better, like keyword tracker or something else. But what Sellerbot did, the developer team, they did an amazing job.
I agree. And it was something that helped us bridge the gap with brands, because brands come to Marknology, manufacturers come to Marknology. They're saying, hey, we want to be on e-commerce or we want to be on Amazon. We want to do it right. Help us get control of our account or help us launch. And they're counting on us to hold their hand and educate them about how to sell on Amazon correctly. So, you know, in some cases, maybe they've only been doing B2B selling for 100 years as a company in some cases. And they're trying to step into 2022 and beyond and be relevant, be current and switch this business model to selling a different way. And a huge part of that is communicating about the same things, but being able to speak the same language. I call that tech speak. But having the same lingo about what we're talking about. And I feel like Seller Board for us as a team, and that's what I can speak to, for us as a team, running multiple accounts, knowing everyone's figures, being able to speak with them and give them actual actionable advice on what to improve or areas like the title of this conversation is Profit Killers for Amazon Sellers. Like, you know, being able to look and say, hey, overall, like our ACoS is good or our TACoS is good or our profitability is good, but there's three SKUs right here that are killing us. you know, in fees or in returns or something like that, that we would never see if you're just looking at the overall, right? So it's ability to get low. Let me ask you a direct question. And before I do, shout out to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, making the show possible. Fullscale.io is helping people build software teams quickly and affordably. If you're looking to add to your software team, check out Fullscale.io. Jenny, what are some of the things, like, you know, you're talking to all of the partners and customers and demos. What are a lot of the things you're hearing from sellers that are killing their profits right now?
Well, this way I'm here. I'm going to talk about hidden profit killers. What I hear the most is they don't always understand how much money they're making, because I've never seen a real Amazon Seller Central account. But what I've heard is a lot of numbers are shown in preview, and there is like a preview text between brackets, and they use all kind of softwares to pull out their data for some different reasons, but they don't always know exactly how much they're doing, because sometimes even software like ours, we refresh once in 15 minutes, for example. Sometimes they need the data because they have other partners, because they have investors for different reasons. They don't know the exact numbers on time. So this is the part. Also, returns are the biggest profit killer always. And it's not only this. I've gathered the topic of why there are hidden profit killers and how they affect your business. So the first one is, of course, when you have your inventory misplaced in the FBA warehouse, or when you have lost inventory, which is normally found within 25 days, or if the inventory was reimbursed, if you were not reimbursed for the lost inventory, or for example, if, because this doesn't sometimes happen automatically, or if, for example, a customer bought an item, initiated a return, but never actually returned the item back to Amazon's warehouse. So sometimes Amazon might not reimburse you for these items automatically. Which is why we have a money back feature, which can get you a report and help you get reimbursed for all these items. But this is not the point of it. The point is that even if customers send the item back to Amazon's warehouse, sometimes it might arrive in a non-sellable condition, yeah, which is the worst part. So what happens basically is, and even if they return the item, you're still going in minus, because what happens is it's like a step-by-step process. Customer initiates return, Amazon refunds the full price, Amazon charges the seller, the product arrives in the FBA warehouse, the product is usually qualified as a sellable or unsellable, and then your stock is updated. Thing is that what this is the strategic normal scenario. Let's go to the worst case scenario. Let's say again, customer initiates a return, Amazon refunds the full price and charges the seller. What might happen is that customer doesn't send the product to Amazon, and Amazon waits for 45 days, charges the customer, then reimburses the seller. So this is reversal reimbursement. Reversal reimbursement is actually a huge profit killer, because what happens is that even though the item is returned, but even though you're basically reimbursed for the item, there is a fee for the shipping, a part of the fee that's not actually returned to you by then. It's like it might be like less than $1 or $2, but still, what happens when Amazon reimburses you back for the item that was not sent? What you'll see is you'll see an amount in preview, in brackets. This is one of the previews that are usually shown in your Seller Central account, but this is not actually the real number that you will be reimbursed with. You will be reimbursed much less, because there is a percentage for the charge that Amazon charges for the way that you'll not be reimbursed for. Usually it's less than $1, but still. In the end, you're going in minus. And if you get a lot of returns like this, still $20 is still a number, let's say for 20 units. So this is one of them. And it's crazy, because sometimes there are a lot of these features that help you get reimbursed for Amazon, and they charge like 20, 25% commission. We don't charge anything for it. But still, a lot of customers that are using Sellerboard still forget to check how much Amazon owes them. Usually, my advice to go into the feature once in 2 weeks and see, because it's an automated report that you're downloading. And I've had, what's funny is I had a guy present on one of my live events, and I was talking about money back and stuff. And he was, and while we were, it was like a 2-hour event, he checked how much Amazon owes him, and it was over $2,000. And then he just writes in the live chat, "Hey guys, I just checked right now while you're talking, and Amazon owes me over 2K. How can I thank you?" I'm like, "You're paying for seller board already. Just visit the feature more often."
Yeah.
So there's such stuff that a lot of errors that you might be charged for, you might not know. And then if you don't notice and try to get reimbursed back within time, it's still, you're losing. It's pure profit in the end, even if you're reselling returned items which are in a sellable condition. So this
one, it's money that Amazon's holding that's yours, you know,
interest-free.
So I want to speak to that just a little bit on from the agency side, like speaking about the return problem and it being a huge profit killer. I think that really the way that we use money, you know, the money back portion or even like the seller board in general, is it's a data dashboard to tell us, you know, it's almost like you're plugging a machine up to your car to tell you what's wrong with the engine, or it's a doctor doing an x-ray or an MRI. You know, for us, it tells us if there's a return problem. So the best way to handle all of what you just said is to have less returns in general. Okay. So, you know, you can have like, if you're having 2000 in returns, like let's say you get your money back, you're back at zero. And then frequently you're getting large chunks of differences like that. There's something wrong, right? So it's not like, you know, if you go back 2 years, maybe you find that, but let's say you clean it up and then going forward in the next 3 months, you have another 2000 that Amazon owes you. You have a bigger problem than just collecting on that money. Maybe your content is wrong. Maybe you're like, you know, one time we were overselling a product, meaning all of our content was like sell, tell about all the values, all the amazing things. And we had a very high return rate, like honestly close to 26%, I think, on this particular item. And the item was amazing. It was a premium item. It's quality. It's like, you know, it's very nice. But I feel like what was happening was a combination of Amazon being easy to return. So people buying this product, and it was like one that you use while you're injured. Think of it like a boot or something, right? And so I think people would kind of use it for a bit and then give it back. And then also they didn't know what they were getting. They're used to getting like basic crutches here in the US, and instead they were getting a very nice item. And so instead we switched the content to educational, like making sure they know exactly what they're buying and what they're going to get and expectations. And we saw return rate drop significantly, right? Another thing you can do is, if you keep seeing the same SKUs getting held up in check-in or like, you know, items going missing, so many manufacturers or brands we work with have their way of doing things. And when we're telling them kind of how Amazon, you know, expects these items to arrive, they're always trying to cut corners, you know, like whether the label is not right or they're trying to use a UPC instead of the SKU or these different things that essentially can hold stuff up in inventory. When you really just use, like we use Seller Board to essentially say, we have a problem here. Let's go talk to our warehouse. Because if things get checked in correctly or we're not getting as many returns, that solves the bigger problem, which is like, you know, Amazon taking from those sales. So while yes, on the backside, you can get money back, there's also a lot that the program can do to tell you what you should be focusing on the front side. And, you know, if you're looking at your overall return rate and it's like 4% or something, you're like, oh my God, okay, I'm below the average of 5% returns. That's amazing. I'm doing good. But maybe you have one item that's almost all of that 4% and you could work on that item to get it better. Exactly. You just can't tell without, you know, the tools like Seller Board, I think, that give you that visibility. Did that make sense?
It does. You can also check the return reasons, and just if you have the same reason all over and over again, then obviously something is wrong with your product. But
it seems to be getting a little better there, because it used to be, I feel like customers would just choose like maybe one or three from like a drop down, like three, and it was like item not as described, or like, you know, item didn't arrive or something like that. And the reasons just didn't feel like they were actually telling us why. But I feel like, I think recently Amazon's allowed ability to add a couple comments, and then
they do write comments now, because in Seller Board you can view them. You just click on the returns number, which is like, let's say 40, for example, it's usually in blue, and then all the reasons will pop out in a pop-up.
I'm not in the weeds all the time myself anymore as far as like operating, but I get in there because we have several partnerships where I own equity in businesses, in brands. We're building brands with people and partnering in that way. And we use Seller Board to essentially tell us like what those shares are as partners, right? And so yeah. I'm getting into Seller Board a bit myself, even as the owner, and saying, okay, we took over this brand. It's been 3 months since we've been working on it. Like what, you know, what kind of changes are happening? It really helps you storytell what's going on, you know, inside your account. It's a beautiful
interface. You know, you don't really need a lot of reports or a lot of tools to understand how much money you're making. Well, from my experience talking with sellers, I think it's so much simpler. Like I might be wrong, but I think you just need to understand. You just need like, let's say a profit and loss report or a sheet where you're understanding how much money you're making per unit sold. You need to have a cash flow report to understand how much money you have, whether you have enough cash to operate your business, and you need the balance sheet to understand what's your stock level and when you need to reorder. I think having those three don't need really much. Having those three will basically help you, at least if you're a beginner, start and be on the go and run your business straight away. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that you need like too much. Of course,
most people don't even have those three. So, you know, they don't, when you ask them like, what's their customer lifetime value, or what's your average order value, or what's your average return rate, or, you know, how much are you making a month in profit? Most of them do not know before we plug them up with a tool like Seller Board, because what it's doing essentially is bridging the gap, I think, between these firms and companies or brands that have accountants or bookkeeping people that do traditional accounting, and they're trying to do e-commerce accounting. They're not there yet. Money in, money out. And Seller Board allows you to see what's inside of that money in, money out.
It is, because usually what accountants do is, they do things late and abstract most of the time. Sometimes they calculate it differently, like units per profit per unit, which is very wrong because there are all those fees in the end that you calculate. Seller Central reports in Excel is very time consuming, and of course tools is much easier because it updates every 15 minutes, let's say hours, and then you can understand how much money you have at the moment. Well, first of all, you should understand that you should be thinking about all the costs that you have per units, because you have in the Seller Central like this manage inventory estimation, right? So I even have it in front of me as a picture. It's the fee is not always precise. It's an estimation, and real fees are in transaction reports, or for example in Seller Board. And opening 100 windows at a time will still, it's very time consuming. And this is why most of the sellers that think, oh, I have this estimation, it's very wrong. It's not the amount that's in the end, but at the end of the day, it's much, much, much lower because you still have the storage fees. You have the long-term storage fees, and they're very different because long-term ones are, they take the ages usually higher than 365 days. So still, it's the storage fees are around 20% of the net profit, if I'm not mistaken, right?
It can be. It depends on what, you know, how much your product is making per sale, or, you know, some people are selling watches and the FBA fee is small because it's a small item and it's not that heavy. And so the FBA fee is small. The percentage is relative, you know, to what you're selling. But yes, you're right. And honestly, as someone that's been doing this a very long time and come across all these problems and lost clients because of these fees, or got hit with long-term storage fees, or you pulled it all out and you couldn't send inventory back in, you kind of learn these things the hard way, you know, and seeing things change. A lot of it has been, I can't tell your FBA fee till we ship the first item. And then we need to benchmark it and make sure it doesn't change, you know, but that item needs to be shipped by Amazon measured before you have an accurate fee. And it was working through these things like let's say long-term storage fees. I've launched my own warehouse. And, you know, I highly recommend to brands working with us that they have FBM and FBA. Why? Well, it allows us to, you know, use a tool like the inventory and see which items are hurting us in long-term storage fees, or even before we get there, running a lean management when it comes to supply chain, where, you know, we are only keeping 30 to 45 days. We have items in FBM that are essentially, if the items are slow moving, or let's say we're selling like a 40 pack or a 50 pack of something, or we want to be essentially, we backfill FBA. So if there's 30 items in stock and they run out, FBM kicks in, while we're sending inventory in, because it just really pays over time to be very on top of that inventory so that you're not storing too much. And it's things like the tool telling you that, that you then create the solution, which is, I need FBA, I need FBM, I need lean inventory and things like that. Okay, the way you've done things before is not working. We need to send in smaller shipments more often or something like that, right? It keeps changing across the board. Yeah. So these are things that, like, it's really your health check. It's super important, the profitability part, because you have to be profitable to stay in business, right? So, and I think that's another reason why this was something that was very hard for me to learn. Coming into e-commerce as someone that just is a bootstrap guy, like with, you know, running a budget and a checkbook. I used to be in a band, living in a van on the road on tour, like you run really lean, you know, and just to be able to survive. Well, when I first started helping sellers, I only thought of it from this perspective, like, okay, we have to be profitable. We have to make money. Like, I need to understand this. And then I worked with Adidas and I worked with some Suiza and some big companies where it was about spending the marketing dollars, hitting top line sales, you know, different goals and strategies than just like having a profitable business. But what I will say is that the aggregators that are in this space, right? There's
a lot of them right now.
70 plus, right? 80 plus, like 20 something billion got dropped into our space in the last couple of years. I love it because it just brings a level of competition and excitement, I think, to the space. But also, they're here because when the pandemic happened and there was nowhere to invest their money, they looked to Amazon businesses, they looked to brands, people selling on Amazon, and they saw profitable businesses, which is something that the economy needs whenever you're going through a slump, whenever you're going through an economic depression and things like that. So that's why our space started getting this attention, was because of sellers understanding this and having profitable businesses, which is just really rare in the startup world. Usually it takes several years to get profitable, and Amazon sellers can come out the gate if they know what they're doing, you know, with profitable products. And it's like, the very reason why we have the tools is, I guess my point is, like, the reason the aggregators are to this space is because people are thinking and caring about these little things like FBM and FBA and long-term storage fees and return rates and essentially creating profitable businesses. I get excited about it just because I think what we're doing is special in the e-commerce space.
It is. I was, because, you know, I'm usually in touch with different people in this sphere. I was... a few months ago, I've been in constant touch with one of an aggregator firms. They're guys who invest. They're two guys. I'm not mentioning names, but they invested billions of dollars in the business. They were doing something. They were somehow connected to companies like Google, but on a different market once, not in the US. So they had this billions to invest, and they invested, they opened an aggregator firm. So basically they rang out businesses. And it's funny because they were new in this sphere around a year and a half, 2 years ago. And when we had the calls with them then, we had calls with them recently. And it was so funny because I've been in this for a long time, and they were like, they had all this money to spend, but they didn't even understand how the whole business is going. Now they understand more, but still it was very funny. Because the market did get a lot of attention, the pandemic, you're right, and people started running, investing a lot without even understanding how it's going. So you do need tools, but you mentioned a great example with the watches, because watches will basically optimize storage fees because it's reduction size, the packaging is usually smaller. So when you're selling small stuff is one thing, but imagine you're selling big stuff that are heavy, that are taking a lot of packaging needs. So this is a bit harder for sellers like this because they don't really understand them. Because we at Sellerbird found over 70 hidden Amazon fees that we take all into account. So there is the FBA inbound, as an example, FBA inbound transportation fee. And there is an FBA inbound convenience fee, and then it's an inbound defect fee and transportation program fee and transportation fee. So they sound all the same, but they're actually all different. There is a coupon redemption fee and customer return per unit fee is the one I was talking about earlier. And there are around 60, over 60 of them, or we found over 70. So there are over 70 fee types that you're constantly being charged for that you don't even know because they're not shown in the Seller Central. The number is shown only in the preview. You have disposal fees, labeling fees, bubble wrap fee, fixed closing fee, taping fee. There's also compensated clawback. So there is all this endless number of fees that you're being charged for that you don't know about. So, and as well as lending costs can change, whether it's by period, by batch, or by marketplace. And you always need to understand your cost of goods, how you're managing them. And I think this is the part which most sellers are constantly complaining about, because there are all these fees, and they are profit killers, because you think that, oh, by the end of the month, I'll have this money on cash on hand, but it's never the same number. This is the part, because even when you're tracking the changes in your cost of goods, if you track it by period, it's never 100% precise, but it's fast, an easy way to do this. First in and first out, it's 100% precise, but it's very complicated to calculate. And when you're weighting the average, it's halfway there and halfway here, but it's kind of almost perfect. So you should be understanding you should always mention the cost of goods that you have and how much money you're spending, whether it's on photo shoot or anything else, because still you're spending the money and it's not the clear cash that goes in hand.
I don't think enough people do that on, like, with the seller board feature, to be able to add those additional fees that aren't, like, you know, coming from Amazon, like photography or whatever. Yeah. A lot of our brands add our agency fee in there so that they're getting the real picture. So yes. I think that's what you're referring to, right? Like additional fee. Okay.
Exactly. And like I mentioned with the returns, I mean, you have, like I said, it's less than a dollar. Well, if you're selling, for example, an item that costs $18.90, you have a referral fee, an FBA fee, cost of goods, you have VAT, you have, so the profit from the $18.90 will be around $6.68, $7. And out of the $7, when the item is returned, let's say as an example, you're spending 0.60 in refund fee. You're still spending, let's say it's $1.20 returns, $20 still, it's the money that you can buy something for.
Right. And I think, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I think that that's why, you know, so many people just focus on advertising spend, but there's really so much operationally that you can improve, that's really where the margin is lost or won, in my opinion, whether it's your box size, it's your cost of goods. Are you buying from China? Are you buying from Latin America? Where are you sourcing from? Can you get it cheaper? Can you bundle them? Can you get them inbound to Amazon correctly with the tape and the labeling and the box label so that they're not getting these additional fees? So many people are like, oh, I've always done this. Well, things changed 3 years ago and now you're getting dinged, you know? So
the change every month. It's crazy how it evaluates. So what I would suggest, in my personal opinion, I think returns are the biggest hidden profit killer. And it's much easier to minimize return costs and do some changes. Like, usually what everyone else will say is, I'll optimize text and images and products and packaging and that's it. Still, you need to understand return reasons apart from optimizing these points. And of course you can get this, you can understand the return reasons by going to Seller Central. Then I think you go to reports, FBA, customer concessions, customer returns. And then there is after this whole long way, there is a last column, to ask for reasons for return or ask for customers to leave you, feedback. Well, instead you can use just like an autoresponder feature that we have, and there are many of them more, which will automatically send request review emails from Amazon, or you can use your own template and ask customers to leave your review or give some feedback to why they're returning the product. Of course, it's in an era that we are now, I think 2022 is crazy. We have all these cell phones with three cameras. It's funny, you know? Or I like the walkie-talkie on the Apple Watch. This is
okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It reminds me kind of my childhood, you know, but still, we have all these technologies that are making things so much easier, because back in 2016 or 15, as far as I know, I might be mistaken, that there were no so accurate tools out there for Amazon sellers, right?
There weren't.
So I understand why then sellers had a lot of issues understanding what they were doing. It would be funny. It kind of is funny that some people are still not understanding how much money they're doing on clean hand, on cash by the end of the day. They're not understanding that they should manage the returns, optimize their product listings, understand the reimbursements, calculate the reimbursements that Amazon owes them, and everything else. Because I think everyone is running after getting more units sold, like with all the PPC campaigns at the moment, right? And therefore forgetting to keep track of everything else.
I think that's where some of the aggregators are failing is operationally. It takes great tools and experience and a great team, a lot of knowledge to really run an e-commerce business, like the operations from supply chain to product design, product development, choosing the right items, the right size, thinking about that intentionally. I'm not just building a box. I'm building a box. I'm understanding what the tier sizes are at Amazon so that I can be under the, you know, if I can be a smaller size tier, why wouldn't I do that when I'm developing my products? You know, just digging into those things as an agency, as a service provider, you know, trying to bootstrap my way into a business in the early years. I can't control customers understanding their cash flow. I can't control customers choosing to have quality products versus cheap, you know, bad products. I couldn't control if they understood their fees or if they were packaging them right because they were using their supply chain. All of these things that essentially made me lose or lose a client is how I felt. Like, I'm a competitive person. They're hiring me to run this business, grow it. And there are certain things outside of my control that we weren't able to do. And these were like where a lot of our learning came from was, okay, I lost this client because it looked like sales were going. We're doing 100,000 a month, but this or but that, whether it was like exactly. Product. And so for us, it became, well, I'm only trying to work with brands that have great quality products. And so it became like, you know, that's a filter. I don't want to work with these cheap knockoff products because then we're going to have major return problems. And then like, I'm not going to be in business with them, you know, very long because then you have to deal with all these problems. You get to choose what you want. Or people choosing, like for me, the conversations now are like, talk to me about your supply chain. If they're trying to work with me, I want to know everything about their supply chain, even though we're talking about marketing and selling on Amazon.
And they know right? nothing
it's
about
really
it.
The supply chain I want to talk to because, you know, how many times I've lost because we've oversold products and they can't get product back in, or they have an incompetent warehouse that constantly has us having issues with Amazon. These are all things that are like, maybe not so sexy. Like when it comes to Amazon, you know, if you're marketing what you do, content or PPC, but these are things that are super, super, super important.
It's funny. I've been with one of Celebrate's partners a few days ago on a call, and he's complaining about stuff, and he's complaining. And at one point, I understand that he doesn't track his inbound shipments. So the number that was sent, so errors in inbound shipments. So he's saying, well, I'm not making this and it's always enough. And I think I ordered a lot and I'm checking the velocity of the sales and how I'm selling. It should have been enough, but I ordered. And he goes complaining for around like 30, 40 minutes. And then I understand that he had inbound quantity deviation. I believe that's what it's called, right? Mm. So some people don't even track the amount that should be checked in Amazon's warehouse of units of the products.
Missing, just missing ordering. Items.
It is. And I think that for me, that was like a sign. You should track this because I thought everyone tracks them, but obviously not. And I think that's also should be considered as a hidden profit killer because these are still, it's your money in the end of the day. And you can save up on, well, you can at least, if you don't really care about them much, because, well, of course, if you're selling 100, 200, let's say 3,000 units a month, it's money for you. If you're selling, I don't know, 100,000 units, well, you'll say, oh, I don't care, I'm selling anyway. But even if you collect, let's say, all this money from the reimbursements that Amazon owes you, from the errors in inbound shipments and such, and make sure that you're getting less returns, and you collect all this money in a jar, you'll have enough for Disneyland a few times a year for your kids.
Yeah, send us, please. We'll tell you and we'll split it with you and we'll go to Disneyland. Like, I'm in. I'm not too old for Disneyland.
Yeah, so. Me neither. I'm planning the one in France very soon, hopefully, before summer ends. So, yes, I think those are the main ones. And I think that if people focus more on the FBA fee changes, whether their products are being remeasured and they're automatically sent in the wrong category for sales, or customer returns that were initiated and never sent back, or changing categories, or lost and damaged stock in Amazon warehouse. If you get reimbursed for these, you'll obviously every month have some reimbursements that you can put aside. And so it's pure profit in the end of the day, and it's your money. And I think it's worth every penny asking for, because it's your investments. So I think that what sellers can do is track their profitability, think about all costs, because as mentioned, there are over 70 fees you're being charged for, you don't know about. And if you're spending on photo shooting, on some advising, whatever it is, you should always insert it into the cost of goods, because you understand in the end of the day how much money the product or even marketing it turned out for you. And keep returns under control and follow all FBAs.
I love it. I have one more thing for you, but before we go to the final part of the podcast, a shout out again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io,
yes,
helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Okay, Jenny.
Thanks to Fullscale.io.
Yeah, thanks to Fullscale.io. Okay, my last thing for you, thinking about it's pure profit, thinking about, investing in content, things like that. Yes. One thing I think about and a reason that we push Seller Board as an agency or a profitability tool is Marknology is so much more than a marketing agency. Okay. So Marknology is really just an Amazon seller with an amazing team that can run everything themselves.
How
but rarely
many
can,
people do you have on the team?
36. We have 36.
All right. It's huge.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We're growing, and we're a full service team with, honestly, between me and my sisters, we have 60,000 hours on Amazon. So we've spent a lot of time understanding how this works. And what I was going to try to say is that, whenever we get hired, I'm always trying to have the conversation. People see our retainer, or they're like, okay, how much are you going to do for me in sales? Okay. Or if let's say it's profit sharing and we're getting a percentage of growth or something. Okay. How much do you think you're going to grow? Okay. I'm already going to release these new SKUs. I know that will mean new sales. Why are you going to get credit for that? They were going to launch anyway. Everyone has this like scarcity mindset thing. And for me, it's hard to communicate it pre-working together, right? But like once we're working together, I think it comes in full light. But for us, there's so much we do that isn't just about top line sales that is essentially like healthy for the business, right? So an example would be, we just started 2 months ago with a brand out of London and we're selling on Amazon.com. They've already been selling, but we came in, sales grew by like, I think in the first month, like the first full 30-day cycle, sales were like, there's a $600 difference. And we're doing like 20,000 a month, just for perspective. So not a huge difference. If we were just looking at sales, it'd be like, okay, that was a good month. Like, let's keep going, right? We're not like growing, but it's like we didn't drop either in the transition. That's a good thing, right? But when we looked at profit, we saw almost a 3.5x increase in profit. So same sales, now being managed by us, whether that's PPC, whether that's returns, whether that's different things we're working on, right? We're just getting started. But immediately, we saw a 3.5x improvement in profit that we took home, that the seller took home. And my point of saying all of that is there's so much more to selling on Amazon or e-commerce than just top-line sales and marketing and buying content and doing PPC. It can be unsexy, but you can be doing the same 20,000 and taking home exactly so much more money if you're paying attention to the things that matter.
All the details.
Yeah. And it's really tools like Seller Board that allow us to tell that story to brands, and say, hey, it's this operational efficiency and this operational improvements. Really, Amazon is a scoring algorithm. It's scoring all of these things. It's not just looking at your top line sales. It's looking at your return rate. It's looking at
I never checked when I started working for Seller Board 3 years ago. There were over 6 million sellers in the world. It's funny that I don't know the number that's at the moment. I think it's like 8, 7.
You think it's gone up or down?
I think it's going up.
Okay.
I'm sure it's going up. But
in the world,
when
yes.
I started, I don't know. It's funny that I never Googled the number that's now, but I should. It just got on the top of my mind. So yeah,
for me, it's like,
it was over 6 million.
As a service provider that's not a software, not a SaaS, like I can only handle, my agency, my team can only handle so many brands. We have to be selective and choose the right ones we want to grow and build with. Software can do much more than that. And I think that's why a lot of, great Amazon sellers go into software, is because they can sell it unlimitedly and they don't have to deal with humans, which is the hard part of growing any business. but 6 million sellers, if there's 200 plus agencies like mine, or, you know, even you add 100 softwares, we're at 300. Yeah. Imagine if all of them have, you know, a couple hundred clients even, which is a large number. There's still millions and millions and millions.
There's
and millions
space for everyone. I think it's always going to be this way because it's crazy. And now even aggregators came in. But yeah, it's a big world. But in terms of all of the speakers, all the people who are in events, all the guys who are just me and you recording podcasts or doing something similar, it's a tiny world for us.
As well.
For everyone else.
Last question for you as we wrap up, just because I know we're coming on an hour. We've talked about like some of the hidden profit,
yes,
you know, profit loss things that sellers can think about. What are some of, what's one of the best features of Sellerboy? Let's leave it here. Like maybe it's not about just profitability, but like what's one that you like when you're talking to people using the software that they just love the most?
It's different for everyone. I'm not a seller and I like the money back most because I just like how it calculates. The money you can get back. I think for the most, well, for some, it's the autoresponder, the request review, and they get a lot of feedback from clients, from buyers on it. For others, they use it for inventory management, right? To understand when you're supposed to restock and so on. For others, most of the agencies, they very much like the dashboard because you can always click on the more feature, understand everything. It's different for everyone. For me, it's money back. I don't know about the rest. Well, as mentioned, it's totally different.
People, she said all of it. She said she loves all of it, basically, is what she said.
I do love all of it. I love money back most. Some people use it only for alerts. So it's different how big your store is, how much products you have, and what exactly you need it for. I will not, just because I work for Sellerboard, I'll not be pushing it for everyone, right? Well, you will probably find the feature for you, if not every single one. But one, I guarantee that you will. Well, it's the most accurate tool on the market at the moment. It's been since it started 2018. So yes, I do love our software. There are very great and amazing softwares out there. I will say that mine's the best because I work for it. But not only because of it. We do have very good features. We start at $15 a month. Users who will click on the link under the podcast will get 2 months of free trial instead of one. And yeah, I mean, it's worth giving it a try. Still, the podcast is not about Sellerboard. It's about focusing on all the hidden profit killers and what sellers usually don't focus on, especially when they have over 100,000 units sold per month. They forgot about the little part because they think, I will not save up on such stuff, but actually you will, especially the more units you sell, the more you have going under your eyes of all the errors, all the expenses that you're not actually noticing you're spending on.
Jenny, that's so good. And I think that's a great way to wrap up the podcast.
And here is advice from a non-seller. Well, I learned on other people's mistakes and this.
No, 100%. Same as I, you know, I like to think we're one of the best agencies in the space, and we love software like this because it just allows us to communicate and it allows us to see what's really going on and get a health check. And I guarantee you, if not, send me a PayPal request. I'll pay you. Anyone listening to this show, if you try the software and you don't at least make yourself more or save yourself the amount of the fee for signing up or trying the software,
it's 2 months of your trial, no credit card required.
Well, either way, my point is that you will surely make your money back or save that money or find an opportunity that's worth that, you know, using these tools. You have to dig in. You can't avoid what you know, you don't know what you don't know is really what I think about. And these tools help you figure out what you don't know about your business and how to get better. The goal has to be constantly getting better. As the game gets harder, we just have to be better and better and better and keep leveling up. And figure out the solutions to the challenges that are coming up, you know, post pandemic, from inflation to supply chain.
I think
there are
going to be plenty more.
I agree. And that's why we have to get better fast, you know, to stay on top.
Exactly.
Jenny, this has been awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show.
And it's an honor. Well, it's a pleasure and an honor both, but it was great. I've been wanting to get on your podcast for a long time, and I can finally make it. So, well, I finally made it.
Well, it won't be the last time we have you on. I can guarantee you that. Thank you for your time. Thanks for staying up late to make this happen. And to our hustlers, thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.